Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time Podcast. I'm Hakun Wong, the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time, and with me today is senior staff writer Ryan Whitfield. And today we got a special episode for you because we're going to be doing the speed round for week 7, where we just take you around the horn and talk a little bit about everything in our Jump the Snap segment, where we get all sorts of information in very short time. Ryan, how you doing? Ryan,
hey,
how you doing?
How are you? I'm good.
All right. Sorry. A little bit of technical difficulties there. So now we're going to be one question short. But so we got the Jump to Snap segment today. You ready to go with some quick hit questions?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take it away with what I think you're going to enjoy talking about. You know, this weekend the Pats and the Jets faced off arguably the best offense in the league and the best defense in the league, and the Patriots ended up prevailing 30-23. So tell me, I know you're a Pats fan. What takeaway did you have from the Pats this Week 7 win against the Jets?
You know, I think it kind of just builds off of a theme that I started talking about after the Dallas game, which is this is one and 1A, the best performance of Brady's career, this stretch to start the season. And this is definitely the best offense I've ever seen this team with. No matter what you do, you know, no matter how good of a team they're playing, because that Jets defense is for real. And, you know, they slowed them down for 50 minutes of this game. And with 10 minutes to go, the Pats were, you know, the Patriots are down. And Brady takes them down on two consecutive drives methodically with one of the greatest sneak plays you'll ever see on that Gronkowski play. I mean, Gronkowski's ability to sell that block there and to, you know, step back for a second and look like he, you know, he even swivels his head is one of the cool moments in that play. He swivels his head trying to figure out, making it look like he's trying to figure out who to block. So the both Jets players come off the edge, and then he just releases and, you know, ends up scoring a walk-in touchdown for 20 yards because he sells it so well. So, you know, they're just such a versatile, dynamic, offense now that I don't know if anyone can stop them.
No, I totally agree with that. And actually, the two things that taught me were that the Patriots are terrific at completely modifying their offense to match up with opponents and match up with their weaknesses. Because one thing that really hit me was I was surprised when it looked like the Pats were going to attack the Jets secondary, because, you know, the Jets secondary is, by the numbers, the fourth best in the NFL in allowing passing yards for opponents. But then it made sense to me when I looked at the numbers again, because it turns out that the Jets rush defense was actually the best in the NFL in terms of allowing rushing yards to opponents. So it made sense to kind of game scheme for the air, and in fact that's what they did, and there were only 9 rushes on the day, very impressive. Actually ties the NFL record for least amount of rushes in a win in NFL history, and of those 9 rushes, 4 of them were Tom Brady. So I was very impressed by that, their ability to kind of morph. I mean, we always knew that. We've seen Belichick do this before, but that really put a big exclamation point on their ability to do that. And then their ability to kind of turn around and understand that the Jets were pseudo one-dimensional, that they really needed the run to succeed, and then shutting down Chris Ivory, who was entering the game as the AFC's leading rusher, and holding him to 41 yards and 17 carries. I thought that was quite a feat as well. So the Patriots have definitely impressed me in Week 7. But I have to say, it was only a 1-score game ultimately. And that Fitzpatrick fumble at the beginning of the game, I think, really did set the tone a little bit. I don't think it would have changed the outcome, but being a one-score game, I mean, it definitely shows to me that the Pats are not untouchable. They're just really, really, really good. So let me turn to the Jets for a second here, because we talked about how great the Pats are. Did you have any takeaways from the Jets and their loss to the Pats?
Yeah, I would say, to follow up on your final point from the last question there, that I've heard that a lot, that the Pats are susceptible. You're not going to blow teams out every week, and I wrote this, you know, going into the beginning of the year, and I've said it a couple times during our podcast here, that I think you know, maybe hopefully after this game, people realize that Jets team is for real. So I don't take this as a, you know, a bad victory for the Patriots. I take this as a great victory for the Patriots and a great loss for the Jets. Now, with that said, I don't think the Jets can take away a moral victory here because at the end of the day, I think the difference became the fact that they have Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. I think they've done a great job building that team. I think Todd Bowles had a pretty decent game. I didn't really agree with his clock management at the end of the game there. But aside from that, you know, he coached a pretty good game. But what it comes down to is that what the Patriots did defensively is the Patriots said, we're going to come up and we're not going to allow Chris Ivory to beat us. We're not going to let you know, your run attack beat us. And they also said they weren't going to get beat on short underneath throws. You know, Malcolm Butler didn't have a good game, but he was out on Eric Decker one-on-one because they were playing single high safety coverage. They rolled this, and immediately on the snap, you can see it every play if you go back and watch the game. They rolled a single high coverage over on top of Brandon Marshall to shut him down. And so they basically dared Fitzpatrick to beat them on the long ball to Decker. And while he had a pretty good game, he didn't have a good enough game, and I don't think he's capable of having a good enough game in that scenario where the Pats play that kind of defense and say, hey, if you can beat us throwing it 10-plus yards, 15-plus yards down the field with Ryan Fitzpatrick, then, you know, we'll tip our caps to you. And, you know, they dare him to do it, and he couldn't do it. So, you know, I think it's a victory that shows how good they are. But
yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I have to – let me just piggyback on that. I think, you know, ultimately the one takeaway I had is in line with what you said. I think the Jets actually need to be more aggressive on offense when it comes to passing the ball. I mean, if you look at the way it's broken down so far, they're 21st in terms of yards per attempt and 16th in terms of passing yards per game. They're not really maximizing that. Now, I understand you got Ryan Fitzpatrick there, but you also got Brandon Marshall. You also got Eric Decker. I mean, you have some weapons out there that they should utilize. And in fact, their offensive line is actually allowing a league low 4 sacks. I mean, that's through 7 weeks. That's pretty impressive, particularly when you see that Seattle's allowing 31 and New England even has allowed 16. So they should really be more focused on becoming more balanced. I think that's what the Pats exposed them for what they are, pseudo one-dimensional, and they need to make some changes. So let's move on to the next topic, and that's Greg Hardy. You know, as we all saw, Hardy had some words for his teammates after Giants' Dwayne Harris had a 100-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. They gave the New York Giants a 27-20 lead, and he first took a swipe at the clipboard of special teams coach Pisacchia, and then he went ahead and had words of all sorts of people, Devin Street and others, and it was up to Dez Bryant to try to calm him down, which ended up blowing up on Fox TV during the broadcast live. So tell me, what do you think about Greg Hardy's outburst with the Dallas special teams? So was it smart? Was it dumb? Was Dez Bryant really showing support for his teammates, or was he just being Greg Hardy?
You know, I'm gonna try to keep my temper down on this one.
okay.
Before the last 2 years, when a couple of my dynasty fantasy leagues, I took Dez Bryant on. So I've only had a personal bias with Bryant for 2 years, and before that was the year where he really had a couple freakouts on the sideline. And I defended Dez, and I said, that's good passion. What Greg Hardy did on the sideline was not good passion on Sunday. First of all, stay the hell out of the special teams huddle. Who do you think you are? There is not a more despicable man in the NFL, and I've never said this about an NFL player before, but I hate Greg Hardy. I hate everything he stands for. I hate that
he's probably
not
in
this
alone.
League. Right. I can't stand watching him. I can't stand him being in this league. And, you know, this comes back to a couple of posts I had written before I joined the site last year when I was arguing with people when the whole domestic abuse thing broke out in the NFL. Ray Rice, for better, will always be victimized because of technology, because it was seen. There were two people at the same time as the Ray Rice incident who were in the league who were sorry, excuse me one second. Hold on, my TV just started up. So there were
a little extracurricular.
Yeah, so you know, between Greg Hardy and Ray McDonald, there were two bona fide monsters in that league. And I'm not gonna go through the details, but all you have to do is go back and read what they're actually convicted of or charged of and accused of. They shouldn't be in the league, and the fact that the Cowboys brought him back after what he did, and again, if their stuff was on videotape, the Ray Rice thing wouldn't even hail in comparison, not to put levels to it, but they are monsters, and he is a monster, and the fact that the Cowboys are going to condone and encourage this behavior shows why they're not America's team anymore, and it shows why they deserve to be in the basement of the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, what pissed me off the most was Jerry Jones' statement after the fact, where he said, quote, "He's, of course, one of the real leaders on this team, and he earns it, and he earns it with respect from all his teammates, and that's the kind of thing that inspires a football team." I mean, that's just complete BS. It's complete. Come on, Jerry. You're not fooling anybody, all right? That is complete BS. He's completely out of line. He should have been disciplined for that. He wasn't. Coach Garrett actually was really soft on him after the game. The next morning, he kind of changed his tune a little bit, said that, quote, "It wasn't exactly the right time and place." But you know what? They're still sanctioning it, and that's a bad thing. That's going to continue to rip apart that Cowboys organization.
It's classless to have him there, and he's a classless person. And the way he acted in the media after that, he acted like a 14-year-old kid in your Spanish class that wouldn't do his homework and then get pissed off at the teacher when he was in trouble.
Right.
You know, he's a petulant jerk, and he should be out of a job a year ago.
Right. Right, I totally agree. It makes me really regret the fact that I stood in line for an hour to get his autograph 2 years ago. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that now. All right, let's back it down. Right, thanks, I feel better. So let's get down to our last question of the day, because I want to make sure we hit this before we run out of time. Should the Houston Texans keep Arian Foster or cut bait next year? As we saw, Arian Foster again was injured, tore his Achilles, out for the season. What do you think? Time to move on for the Texans?
Oh, you know, I think you got to. Overall, I don't think the running backs in the NFL are very valuable anymore. They're few and far between that are really worth being, you know, considered an elite weapon on your team. And I love Arian Foster. I love the way he plays. I love his production. But, I mean, at some point, it's everything. I mean, it's not the same reoccurring injury. It's something new every single time. So, whether
right.
it's a hamstring or a groin, now the Achilles, you know, it's just the guy, you know, it's not a toughness question, because I hate when people say that. It's not that he's not tough. It's just that his body isn't strong enough. And that's genetics. That's not something you can work on.
I totally agree with that. And I think that at this time, it's time to move on, at our minimum, find a legitimate backup. I mean, since 2010, Arian Foster has played all 16 games in the season only twice. He hasn't been effective since 2012. In fact, he hasn't played a full season since 2012. The guy is just perpetually injured, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the strength training. Maybe it's the way his diet. I don't know what it is, but the guy is always injured, and no matter how good his skill set is, if he's not in the field, he can't help your team. And that Texans organization is a mess anyway. It's time to reboot, particularly with the entire Ryan Mallett thing, you know, missing the flight, having to buy his own ticket. That's just ridiculous, ridiculous, entire organization. Okay, so we've actually run a little bit – we've run out of time because we're doing our speed pick. So the one last thing before we take off, your MVP of the season, just give us your MVP of the season so far.
Yeah, it's Tom Brady.
Why am I not surprised? Why am I surprised?
Well,
I won't even ask you
Cam
why.
Cam throws too many picks. You know, Cam just like, I would say Newton because of what he's doing with nothing, but until he gets those pick numbers down, I think you have to give it to Tom the way he's playing.
I think Devontae Freeman gets some ups here only because of the fact that the Falcons are actually successful with the exact same passing attack, but now they got a legitimate ground presence with Devontae Freeman. I think he's turned that around in a way, and I think the Falcons are actually only contending because of the fact that he's a threat on the ground. So I think he might have some potential for MVP. All right, we've run a little short on time, so we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Go ahead, Ryan, give us your Twitter handle so people can follow you on Twitter.
Yes, at Ryan Whitfield, N-E.
All right, and you can follow Football Garbage Time at FB Garbage Time, and we will see you again next week with another edition of our Football Garbage Time podcast where we talk about Week 8. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of the NFL week, and we will see you again next week.
Adios.
Adios.